In the origin story that Mike Nichols liked to tell, he was born at the age of 7. The first image of himself he chose to conjure for people was that of a boy on a boat holding his younger brother's hand, traveling from Germany to America. They were unaccompanied on that six-day crossing in 1939, their ailing mother still bedbound in Berlin. Their father was already in New York. His two small sons had not seen him for almost a year. Nichols was not yet real, even to himself. His name was Michael Igor Peshkovsky, or perhaps it wasn't. Decades later, his brother Robert, looking into his family's history, told him that according to the ship's manifest and the petition for naturalization that was later filed by his father, his name was actually Igor Michael Peshkovsky. Igor. A horror movie name. Nichols looked at him impassively. Maybe, he said. Maybe it was. It didn't matter. Whatever his name when he boarded ship, it was gone by the time he got to New York. Nichols turned the transatlantic crossing into a story, his first self-revelation as anecdote, an approach that he would eventually refine into a shield and a disguise, but also into a style of directing, a means of conveying an idea or a feeling or a circumstance to an actor that he deployed with precision and finesse over a 5-decade career in movies and theater. He first tried it out on journalists in his 20s, when suddenly everyone wanted to know who Mike Nichols was and where on earth he had come from. The story he told, droll and wry, with a slight undertow of despair, was that at 7, he was packed onto the boat knowing only 2 sentences in what would become his new language. I do not speak English, and please do not kiss me. In some tellings, he spoke no English at all, and instead wore those 2 warnings on a penciled sign that was pinned to his clothes before boarding. It was this picture, the New Yorker cartoon version of his early life, with a punchline that hinted at both utter solitude and defiant standoffishness that Nichols used to explain his personality to others and to himself. A portrait of the artist as the little prince. Alone on his planet, and at home, nowhere. If the boy who had existed for 7 years before that journey usually went undiscussed in interviews, it was in part because Nichols' life before America was so hazy to him that he could retrieve little of it until adulthood. His childhood in Berlin, his years as either Michael or Igor, barely existed in his memory. As a youngster, he attended the private Jüdische Waldschule Kalisky, an elementary school that, during Hitler's rise, became a Jews-only institution. Nichols' father, a doctor named Pavel Peshkovsky, was a Russian Jew, albeit so secular that he didn't even believe in circumcision. His mother, Brigitte Landauer, was a German Jew, wholly invested in and proud of her national heritage, and also indifferent to her religion. Within their cultural circle, Paul and Brigitte were not atypical. As Ladi Kaliski, who founded the school Nichols attended, put it, "We all had to learn to become Jewish. Most of us came from very assimilated families, and so did the children. But we understood that in order to give children a more positive attitude, they had to know something about their background." Whatever that education was to be, Michael, or as Elaine May later teasingly called him, Little Igor, was not in the school long enough to absorb it. His memories of the Kaliski school were few and mostly miserable. He recalled a group of German children in black shirts stealing his bicycle. And more vividly, he could picture, with awful clarity, a scene with my gym teacher and my mother and realizing they were lovers. She was a beautiful woman, and I remember her quarreling with him, and he ripped a necklace off her and threw it out a window, and she went running after it. As an adult, Nichols spoke as if that moment were still raw, admitting, "I suppose I've spent a large part of my life trying to sort that out." But at other times, he pushed the door shut. A Jew in Nazi Germany, parents always fighting, he would say, as detached as if he were musing about a stranger. "Aren't all childhoods bad?"